You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Heritage Radio Network on Tour, presented by Le Creuset. I'm Dana Cowan, and on Heritage Radio Network, I host a show called Speaking Broadly. Today, we're broadcasting live from HRN Podcast Lounge at Feast Portland. We want to thank our sponsors, Le Creuset, Travel Portland, Salt and Straw, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible. Today, I have an extraordinary talent with me. Someone who I've known for a really, really long time. Like, I'm going to find out how old you were when I first met you. Tyler Malik, who, if anyone likes ice cream, you're going to like Tyler, because he's responsible for over 600 flavors of ice cream, all of them unusual and delicious at Salt and Straw. So welcome, Tyler.
Thank you.
Okay, so how old were you when I met you?
Oh, my gosh. I was 23 when we first met. And that was 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
I feel like I've learned a lot since then.
I
actually know how to make ice cream now, I think.
I know. So for anyone who doesn't know, Tyler up and changed his life and decided to move and to make ice cream with his cousin, Kim. You bought like a used ice cream maker to make your first flavors.
Yeah. Is that? Three used ice cream makers from Goodwill.
Okay.
And they were $4 each.
That was a very good $12 investment.
It was a lot of money at the time, yeah. Though. And yeah, we made ice cream from scratch, and this idea of like just having fun with flavors and using ice cream, like just cream and sugar as this foundation to like go off on journeys, flavor journeys, and learn about the city around us. That was like our philosophy from day one. And it just so happened we were in Portland, which is like the coolest city to go on a flavor journey in.
That's true. What are your favorite Portland flavors?
I remember it was wild. The very first time I ever, we decided we want to make a Portland flavor. And we wanted to, you know, like, I don't know if you remember in 2011, we had a bacon and maple phase.
Yeah,
the whole world was on this craze.
Right. And you were right there with them. You were crazy.
Yeah, well, but I was like, oh my gosh, Denny's just came out with a bacon and maple ice cream. And so I went, and we didn't have even a brand yet. I went and met with Elias Cairo at Olympia Provisions. And for some, I don't know why, he sat down with me. We didn't have even a logo or a name. And he was like, yeah, let's meet. Let's talk about bacon and ice cream. And
amazing.
We came out with like three different flavors coming out of that. We made a melon and prosciutto ice cream using this very particular copa that he makes. And I think it's just one of those things. You get this, like, for some reason, Portland people are just, like, in the food industry, we open our arms and, like, welcome everyone in.
So I want to talk about that gigantic leap that you made. And you're like, sure, I'm going to make ice cream. I don't know how. I never have. But it sounds like a really fun, interesting thing to do. And you were talking about that on a recent TEDx talk that you did. We'll talk about some of the details of that.
Yeah.
But it was a leap.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the first leap that you'd made of that kind in your life? Or does that follow a pattern of just like, I can do it. I'm going to try something new.
That's a good question. I think I love this idea. I think I've been really, really lucky in life to be able to have a lot of opportunities and be able to jump around a lot. And so I've been able to travel, you know, lived in Beijing and lived in Juneau, Alaska, and, you know, have been all around the world, really.
Wait, why did you live in Beijing?
I my major is in Chinese.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Which is the most random thing to learn before making ice cream.
Yeah.
But I love this idea of traveling around and learning about new cultures and new food and that's always been like a passion of mine, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to find ways to make life work in all of those different cities. And when we first made it, started making ice cream, that was the idea. We were going to open a food cart for like 6 months. Uh-huh. We were like, that would be really cool if that were successful enough to make it through summer and somehow not lose too much money. And we didn't. I mean, we lost money, but not apparently not enough to deter
us. Not to stop you, yes.
And that was the kickoff of like this really amazing way to learn about food. What's cool is that I get to use that passion and still like travel the world and learn about different cultures and food and through ice cream. And it's just like a good reason to get paid for traveling and to learn about different flavors.
So where has ice cream taken you?
Oh, that's a great question.
The ice cream boat.
I'm trying to think. I think, you know, we're constantly trying to pull in different levels of innovation. I was in Southeast Asia a couple years ago, and I think that really, like, specifically Taiwan was one of my favorite places the street food culture there in particular is one of the biggest and strongest in the world.
And what influence did it have on your palate? Like, did it change your palate in any way being in Southeast Asia?
You know what's cool is you start seeing these people that are like dedicate their life to making one thing. Yeah. And that's like one of the most inspiring things you could ever do. And you know, it's just like this scallion pancake that someone wakes up at 3 a.m. every day to set up on that street corner and make.
Right.
And I think that in and of itself is just really fascinating for me. And I think that in particular just I know for me personally, it reinvigorated this idea of like, I'm going to make ice cream every day.
You're going to make ice cream every day. And how, in terms of the innovation, which is something mm-hmm. that Zollenstra is so known for and a tribute to you and your crazy mind, how important do you think it is to change the flavors? Because, for example, you know, if you're talking about like street food, they actually do the food of their father, the food of their grandfather, and they're not really interested in innovation, but they're interested in doing the same thing perfectly and making it better and refining. And you're interested in doing the same thing perfectly, but in experimenting.
Yeah. I mean, okay, well, I'll answer that, but there is innovation in that, right? Okay. Like, every time they move one thing of, you know, their tin of spoons by a half an inch, that's fascinating to me in particular. But we don't have to go down there.
No, I keep going. I think that's really interesting.
You know, what I really love, I love working with specifically, like, this is kind of cool, like writers, right? And like, I love this idea of like, you think of some of the best magazines that you're just infatuated with and you're excited to come out, like what's coming out next month? What is the theme? Mm-hmm. And you open it up and you like just are completely transported for this moment in time because they're talking about, you know, wines in Eastern Washington or, you know, like what it, and I think that in particular is what I try to capture in our ice cream. I love this sense of adventure that we can take you on. And whenever you come into Salt and Straw, we're going to tell you a new story and we're going to learn something new with you through a scoop of ice cream. And we change our menu every month. It's the first Friday of each month. And I think that's it's a really critical kind of cadence for us mm-hmm. in our innovation process, but also for our customers in their kind of like learning process.
So how did you choose that cadence? Because you could, you know, some people change seasonally, which would be every 3 or 4 months. And you're like, no, it's going to be more frequent than that.
It's almost too frequent sometimes. you know, there's something like monumental about every first Friday in my, I don't know why, you know, this monthly cadence it's become this like sacred cow for us at Salt and Straw. And when you come in, like we get people that are literally, you know, writing to us 12 hours in advance, and they're like, is there any chance you can tell us 12 hours in advance what flavors you're coming out with tomorrow?
Oh my God.
We got a note from someone that said, you know, the last day of the month is one of the saddest because that's when I pay rent, and that's, you know, like, and I sit here and I'm refreshing my bank account on one end. But on the other end, I've got another tab open with the Salt and Straw website, and I'm refreshing it to see what new flavors are coming out.
Wow.
And there's something about that, like, moment of happiness that I think really can have the can change people's day. And we want to push ourselves. Like, we call ourselves a generous brand because we push ourselves beyond the limits of what seems feasible, to go out above and beyond and really have fun and test out new things and offer something new every single time you visit.
So you also have great partnerships.
Yeah.
And the partnerships, I think, keep things really fresh. I love the partnerships with the school kids. Like, they develop flavors for you.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
So 8 years ago, there was a fifth grade teacher, right when we had one shop, she came by and she was like, can I just bring my class and can we make ice cream for a day? And they came by and I had this insane day with them. We were just making ice cream. We invented three flavors and I can only remember two of them. One of them was a Skittle Rainbow Sherbet.
Wow.
Where the kid was like, well, can we just take Skittles and, you know, somehow put them in the ice cream machine? I was like, sure, let's try it. And then the other one was a chicken teriyaki pineapple ice cream. One of those two was delicious.
I'm not going to tell me which, yeah. Shocking.
And, you know, we did this program and we were like, okay, let's make like five batches of this ice cream and put it on the menu and see what happens. And, the whole city of Portland went insane over it. And we raised, I don't know, it was a small amount of money, $1,000 or something. And 3 months later, we got this note from the teacher, and they said, Nike in Portland, and Nike saw this donation. They thought it was a great opportunity to use it as seed money, and we, with your money and their money, we built a new playground.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
That's what I thought.
That's
incredible. Yeah, and I mean, it felt so minuscule at the moment,
yeah.
But you go there, and then we went and we met the kids, and they were playing, and we were like, this is it. This is what we want to be in business for.
Right.
And we realized that as we opened new stores around the country, we think, if we can get in and we can be part of that community, that means being at the PTA meetings. It means being, at the small business organizations. And that's the only way we can be a profitable business, I think, and still continue to grow and feel good about ourselves.
I'm curious, because you have some investment that's allowing you to grow more. So what are the plans? Like, it feels like such a Portland brand, but of course you're throughout, you're really well distributed, actually.
We've been...
And now you're in New York.
Kinda. Small.
With Joe's.
Yeah.
And with Daily Provisions.
Yeah.
But, like, what are the expansion plans? Like, how much of the rest of America gets to have Salt and Straw? Well, you can mail order it, of course, but in their hometown.
Yeah, I mean...
Scoop Shop.
For us, for some reason, we picked the hardest expansion model in the world.
What was that?
Every city you go to, the Salt and Straw is completely different than any other city.
And that means, like, design, flow, flavors?
Exactly, all of it.
Wow.
And that local manager is embedded in their community.
Yeah.
And we own all our own shops, and we feel strongly that, like, this experience is special. And we want to foster it. And, of course, we want to grow it because we feel like the world needs some of that happiness. Mm-hmm. But we can't just, like, copy and paste it around the world.
I'm curious how you set that up because, as we both know, it's a time of enormous growth of... really good food with chains, right? So I work with Dig, New York based restaurant group, but we have restaurants in Boston. We're about to open in Philly, and then beyond that, we're going to open in other cities. And I've been working on a hyper local campaign for Boston and for Philly
so that
we're really part of the community because we don't want to actually be just another box.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm curious, like, I'm deeply curious, like, more curious than the listeners probably, but, how you are going to be part of those communities and not end up like just another box.
Well,
it's a local manager who's in the community and then, but you must control the flavors from Central.
Yeah. I'm able to control the flavors here in Portland. That's my job. But when we opened in LA, I basically lived in LA for 6 months before we ever opened our shop. And 3 months before we opened, we had a kitchen there in downtown LA. We were making everything. We found, I mean, it's far more than, like, of course we found a local dairy and we, you know, found these amazing farms, but it's embedding yourself in that city and it's having a food cart and going to all the farmers markets, you know? It's like all these things becoming part of kind of the daily dialogue in that city. And what's wild is even today, I would say there's about, I mean, this is going to hurt some Portlanders' feelings, but about 40% of people that live in LA still think we started in LA. And, you know,
that's
I think...
sort of shocking, yeah.
That's the biggest compliment to me in my entire life, because that was what we went out to do. We wanted to say, like, I have this dream of somehow expanding a business, and instead of exporting our product, let's export our culture. Mm-hmm. And that's way different.
Yeah.
We call it the... I can't say this on radio.
Yes, you can.
It's the screw you McDonald's model.
That's a good one.
Yeah, because we love this idea of, like, we want to grow. We think that's important. And we think we're doing something really, you know, world-changing at Salt and Straw. But it's not going to be just this copy-and-paste McMansion model. And so it's really fun and exciting and it's inspiring.
Yeah. It's probably slow as well.
Very slow and very intentional.
Yeah. So the TED Talk on creativity, I was struck by the way that you develop flavors and your ideas about creativity. That creativity is something that is controllable. Like, you can cultivate it. Mm. You're not born with it or not born with it. You can create it within yourself. Do you feel that you are born as a creative?
No, not at all.
You really don't?
No.
Okay.
It's funny because... I really think I have really poor taste buds, and I'm not creative, which is so weird.
Shocking.
I've got the opposite job of what I should have. I should be like a data analyst at Microsoft or something.
Yeah. Like, why am I supposed to believe that, considering you do have such great flavor combinations, and you are the creative lead on this exceptionally creative company? So why should I believe you?
You know what's cool is, like, I realized really early on that I'm a passionate person. Like, I have passion for telling stories. I have passion for bringing people along. I have passion for insane, you know, uplifting service. And if I channel those in the right way, I can create amazing products. And I remember I was... You know, there's about 3 years in at Salt and Straw, we were hiring this manager, and as it turns out, she turned out to be one of our best managers we've ever hired. And I interviewed her, and I was talking to her, and I stepped back, and I was meeting with Kim, and I was like, she just doesn't seem to, I don't think she likes ice cream. And I was like, I don't think I want to work with anyone who doesn't like ice cream.
Yeah.
And we sat there for a second. And we were like, she was incredible. Mm-hmm. She was. I was like, she doesn't like ice cream though. That's a disclaimer, right?
Right.
And we realized, like, she was passionate. She loved, you know, like, she loved art. She loved music. She loved, you know, the people around her, her family. And we don't need her to love ice cream. We need her to be passionate about something and to channel that passion into her job.
So it really turned out to be okay. Like, it was okay that she didn't love ice cream.
It was incredible. And I realized that the same thing about me. Like, I don't need to have the best taste buds. I don't need to, like, you know, just wake up in the middle of the night with the best ideas in the world. Like, I just need to be passionate about what I'm doing and really learn how to use the skills that I have. And for me, I'm very analytical. Uh-huh. I'm very, like, I love interviewing people and learning about their life story and their flavors and their ingredients and their techniques. And that's where I find my passion. And so I'll go out and I'll interview, you know, the best chef in the country. You know, I get to work with
Give me an example. Like, because I think this is so interesting.
Well, yeah, I think Tracy Desjardins, right, in San Francisco. I remember I got to work with her for the first time about a year and a half ago. And I was like, well, I think you're really known for flavors like this and this. And she was like, stop. You know, here's how I think about food. Here's how I think about textures. Here's how I think about the, you know, the way flavors interact with your experience. And I was like, oh, yeah, sorry. I shouldn't have said anything.
Let's not just talk about butter and salt.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's different, right? That's when you're like, cool, how do I capture everything you just said into one scoop of ice cream? And I can do that. Like, I can just translate that. That's like A plus B plus C equals F.
But
know?
Somebody does need taste buds. So, like, if they're not yours, there must be someone there who's working on the taste bud part.
Really, really awesome team members. Yeah, don't worry.
Yeah. You.
Yeah.
That's good. And when you, in talking about the creativity, you talk about the way that, like, you'll start with a crazy idea and then, or start with a simple idea, not a crazy idea, like mm-hmm. Halloween, I think was the example. But I would love just for the listeners to hear the process that you go through, because I think it's unlike anyone else's process that I've ever heard.
Cool. Yeah.
It's very associative. It's very evocative.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you a starting point.
Okay, okay.
Like a summer day in the smell of hay.
It rhymes. Did you mean to do that? Make it rhyme?
Once I said it, I was like, ooh, and that rhymed.
That's good. I like that.
Is that too hard, or do you start with
a summer day
with the smell of hay?
In the smell of hay. No, I love that. I think that's like, I love this idea. We, you know, I talked a lot about in this TED presentation about kind of drawing a box around, give yourself some boundaries. And for me, when I think about flavors, I think that's really, really important. I think when you're just kind of floating off and everything's possible, then nothing is possible. And so, okay, let's say like a summer day in the hay.
With the smell of hay.
Oh, summer day with the smell of hay. Okay.
Like cloudy with a chance of meatballs, yeah. But whatever. So
it's cool,
like,
cool. I love
you're basically
it.
On a farm and
a
it's warm.
Day,
and
smell of hay.
Yeah.
So I think like this idea, you know, we've got some foundational pieces. Like it has to be scoopable in ice cream. It's my number one rule usually.
Could it ever not be? Like, could it ever actually not be scoopable? Like, could it be cuttable?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's just a different, you know.
Fine.
Depends on the venue.
Okay.
In a summer day, I think it should have some, like, it should be uplifting. Like, whatever that means, like, it should be uplifting. It should, like, raise your day. It should be bright. That could come in the form of, like, you know, some beautiful acids or, like, some floral flavors. And with the hay, I think it should have some, like, a little bit of smokiness, like a little bit of barnyard funk. And so you start thinking, like, what fits that parameter? And then from there, I think the biggest thing that we have, I stress to my team is, like, don't go to ingredients next. That's
really?
The worst thing you could do.
I was literally going to say, so what would that be? And that's not it. Why
no,
not?
No. Like, okay, we have these parameters. Like, it should taste somewhat like this. And your instinct is probably go with, like, I don't know, strawberries and blah, blah, blah. You know? Or, like,
Sounds good.
Strawberries and white wine. I don't know. But, like, that's good. It's a trap. It's a fallacy. This is where, come up with how are we going to combine these flavors and what are we trying to do with this? I think you're a writer, right? Like, I love this idea, like, the biggest trap you could set is like you set up your like I want to write this story. Here's the point I'm trying to make, right? I don't know if you've ever written stories like that. Like I've got this purpose and I just want people to think this.
I mean, actually, I'm the reverse, and so my editors are always like, "You actually need to start your story know like what the purpose is." And I'm like, "No, I'm just kind of right
and you and I can be best friends, creative minds."
But in any case,
no, you need to see where you need to give
exactly.
it. Like,
I'm just gonna write it, and even if I have to revise it six times, which is so irritating and also irritating for the editor, let it be said.
Yeah.
I discover so much in the process that I can't. I mean, I know in the biggest picture, like I would know summer day with the scent of hay, but I wouldn't know like that I'm trying to evolve, you know, evoke love. Like I sort of discover
that
along the way.
Cool. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, if you let the story go where it needs to go, it's going to be a very different story than it would have been if you just, like, said, okay, here's the three points I'm trying to make. I'm going to just make sure that my thesis matches up, right?
Okay, wait, so we're not getting to ingredients next. What comes next?
I think next we should think about, like, how, what emotions should it provoke? Like, what are we trying to, why are we writing this in the first place?
But is there ever not happiness? Like, are you ever trying to evoke something else? Are you trying to evoke nostalgia or sadness or reflection? I mean, it just seems like your realm of emotion would be kind of on the bright side for all ice cream. That squeak. For all ice cream.
Yeah. No, yeah, like I want it to feel like an uplifting summer country song, you know, like in,
yeah, that's good.
sitting by the river and like
some gingham.
Yeah. So let's go in that direction. Like, you know, we're kind of like, we want it acidic, fruity, floral, like we've got this. And then we start combining flavors after that.
Okay.
And trying to match up flavors to that, like that.
But you have
theory.
An emotional heart and a story that like is in the center of everything.
Right.
Before, like after the parameters and yeah. before the ingredients. And before you work out the science.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden it'll make so much more sense because it's almost becoming obvious to me like where we should go with this. I think it should have a little bit of chamomile in it. Mm-hmm. I think it should have like maybe something malty, like even like a, you know, like some, we can use some brewer's malts. Start combining those together, something, a little bit of lemon, maybe some raspberry.
That's an ice cream I'll eat. So yeah. you've come up with 600 plus flavors. Does it ever feel either like you're parsing things to, like, do you ever feel you're sick of that?
Sick of ice cream?
Sick of flavors.
No. Well, this is the cool thing about changing your menu monthly is like we're constantly finding a new story to tell. And there's never going to be a lack of stories to tell.
That's true, but you could hit the point where you're like, you know what? I've told so many stories. What I actually want to do is chop wood. You know, like.
That sounds nice. Well, no, like I, and you know, for better or worse, I don't know if anyone's noticed over the past 2 or 3 years. Like, I go out on my own journeys with flavors, and. I get to learn what I get to like satisfy my idea of exploration through this, through creating.
Yeah.
And you know, that means like yeah, we used to make, like, I used to get to meet with the best chefs in the country, but now like I kind of want to meet with like the Oregon Symphony, right? And like we start like, so you know, I invited them into our kitchen and we started making ice cream together, and they ultimately they played this one, like it was a minute and a half of Bach. And we translated that 1.5 minutes to 1.5 minutes of flavor tasting and ice cream. And as you're eating it, the flavor notes match up perfectly with the musical notes. You know, that's cool.
That's really,
really
cool.
Fun.
And okay, so what's your next sort of out of the box? Like, you're not talking to people who think flavor. You're talking to people who think about stories.
For me, I'm working right now on a really important project, in my opinion. We're working for next year with some of the best food incubators in the country. So Hot Bread Kitchen, La Cocina, Portland Mercado. These programs that are finding people that inherently have this insane talent and just giving them the platform to start their own businesses. And using them to almost find use them as our sourcing partners, right? To source the best ingredients in the city. And so for us, like, I love this because it's just, I'm sitting back and I'm like, where is this flavor going to go? And where are they going to take us on this journey with this purposeful intent to find stories that are in our city that most people wouldn't know or understand? Or be able to see. And we have this blessing of having so many customers coming to Salt and Straw. We get to bring light to this program that is really, you know, systematically changing the world. And we're just kind of the platform to tell that story from, the soapbox, right?
I think those partners are really interesting because they tend to be immigrant populations, right? Mm-hmm. So they're people whose stories aren't told as much, their flavors aren't as well known, and if you can popularize them through ice cream, that's a great reflection on the community, great opportunity for the community as well as for you guys.
Well, it's so cool because I think it normalizes this food that is like it's the best in the world for so many different reasons, and I think we get to like. We get to highlight that. It's fun.
You need to do fiction writers next. Have people like write fiction stories, and you have to create ice creams from the fiction stories.
We write some pretty epic comic books here in Portland.
Yeah,
so
I was in a great comic book store.
Yeah.
Just is hard to take me hard to take me away from that. Well, I think that's all we have time for, Tyler.
Thank you.
It's so much fun to talk to you.
Thank you for everything.
And also see like the arc of your exploration of flavor and the way that Salt and Straw, you know, embraces the entire world, just not only the world of chefs and ingredients, which is really, you've gone so much bigger and brought so much joy.
Oh,
even
thank
in
you.
This, you know. Well, it stopped raining, which is fantastic.
It's a beautiful...
In this beautiful cloudy day. Like, who's not ready for some caramel? So thank you so much for listening to Heritage Radio Network on tour. Presented by Le Creuset. Thanks again to our sponsors, Le Creuset, Travel Portland, Salt and Straw, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage popular. I'm Dana Cowan. Stay tuned for more from Feast Portland and eat some amazing Salt and Straw ice cream.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.